Welcome back, baseball fans, to episode 9 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I am Ryan Sullivan, editor-in-chief of NatchGM.com and NatchGM.com on Twitter, your host for this week, and I am joined, as always, by MLB-certified agent and Arliss's favorite best friend, Joshua Kuznick. Josh, how are you, buddy?
Good. Busy. Way busier than I anticipated going to Nashville.
Yeah, I wanted to thank you first and foremost at the top of the show just for joining me, because we are, I don't know, 4 or 5 days away from the winter meeting starting. So this is kind of an interesting time to talk to an agent and get your perspective. So thanks for clearing a few minutes.
Yeah. So, no problem. I have a break today, driving down to go visit a player, so we're good.
Very cool. First place I want to start with you is with Carlos Asuaje and the recent Craig Kimbrel trade. I'm not certainly going to ask you what your thoughts are on the trade. You know, we can keep that for off air and other thoughts. But I want to start with, first of all, did I break the trade to you?
No, Carlos did. Carlos called me after the Red Sox informed him. That's a thing a lot of players, I guess, don't realize, is that you know, it's like, I've had questions before, like, hey, if I get traded, are you going to find out and let me know? I'm like, no, the team's going to call you, and then you're going to let me know. So I found out from him. Originally, I thought it was for a different player, and it ended up being Kimbrel, and the other player on the surface would have made more sense to me, but I guess they're going for it, so good for Boston. But his trade really, 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 really is good for Mr. Asuaje.
And fill me in and fill the audience in. Why do you say that?
Carlos likely would have been headed back to Double-A because of Boston's depth at second base. He played short and third, second, first, left, center, right, but primarily short and third. And they've got Cicchini and Marrero and they had Jamiah Leak last year, and there's a free agent. So I'm forgetting a good prospect. Oh, Sean Coyle at second. And, Dustin Pedroia and Pablo Sandoval. So he was kind of buried in Boston. And San Diego, I guess A.J. Preller saw him in the fall league hit 330. And I've said this before, that's why his makeup is like, generational, like, makeup. Like, this is a guy that's 5'7", 5'8", 165 pounds. And a couple of years ago, he still hit 15 home runs with 109 RBIs. And the guy just wills himself to be great. And I have other guys who have very similar makeup, but I do always have a little special place in my heart for Mr. Asuaje, because, God, he has just beaten so many odds. It's like my guy Lugo at the back surgery. I love guys like that overcome adversity. Case in point, Mr. Jeffress.
Yeah. Great point. And you named a bunch of guys that I want to hit on before we wrap up today. But let's start with what are your responsibilities after one of your players has been traded? Or do you have anything?
You know, I just try to calm the player down first off, because it's pretty jarring, especially when it's a minor leaguer getting traded. I mean, I remember, you know, I've been through big trades before. You know, Kane got traded for Greinke, and Jeffress was part of the Greinke trade. Brantley was in the Sabathia trade. So, you know, I've been through this before. You know, Clevinger was traded for Jake Arrieta, and now possibly another player. We'll see if that happens by 9 p.m. tonight. And, you know, so I've been through this. So for me, if a team trades for you, it means they want you, and you're in a better spot than you were before, in my opinion. So with Asuaje, you went from possibly going to Double-A to, in my opinion, you know, A.J. Preller came out after the trade and said Carlos is going to big league camp now, which he wasn't with Boston. And he's competing for the opening day second baseman job, where worst case scenario, he goes back to AAA, where in Boston, best case scenario, he finished the year in AAA.
Yeah, that's a great point. And, you know, we don't think of that on the surface. So what is it like for Mr. Asuaje and his, you know, perspective?
I mean, he's excited. I mean, he loves it there. I mean, San Diego just blew out Carlos to San Diego, and a few, one of my other prospects, and a few prospects, blew him out to San Diego kind of for a meet and greet, and Carlos is out there right now getting to know the city, and, you know, I was there last year for the winter meetings, and I was recommending places to go, and he loved it there. I mean, it was sad and for Carlos's family on one side because their family they're diehard Red Sox fans, like all over the house, even before he was drafted, like they were diehard Red Sox fans. So the historical aspect and the dream of being a Red Sox, that was always a dream for him. But at the end of the day, getting to the big league is always the goal. So whatever gets you there the quickest, who cares?
Right. Great point. So
plus a guy like him profiles with his bat, profiles much better in Petco than he does at Fenway. I mean, he's a gap to gap guy. I mean, he really could hit 300 in Petco.
Well, and his versatility fits a little bit better in the National League, perhaps, than in the American League, just on the surface as well.
I agree with that completely, because with his versatility, he can carry an extra pitcher. So I think he is more of a National League player. And Boston's a great organization developmentally, from my experience. And it's a good place to like learn how to be a pro and then move on maybe somewhere else and then get your chance to be a big leaguer somewhere else.
Yeah, this could be a good, like you say, it could be a good thing for him. I was really impressed with how good he looked in the fall league. I got to see a couple of games on MLB Network that he was playing in, and his swing looks really good. I mean, this guy
can hit. He has the same swing as Michael Brantley. They have the same swing. They have the exact same swing.
You know, it's funny. Now that you say that, I can definitely see that. Very short to the, very compact to the ball.
It's crazy. I remember the first time I saw him. I'm like, wow. You know, I told the story, but I didn't want to sign him. When I first had him, he had a different advisor, and he wasn't getting the best advice out of the draft, and I felt terrible for him. But I told him, like, listen, you don't need to hire me, like, but please fire your guy. And because I didn't do the draft at the time. And he goes, well, I can't. And he asked me, he goes, why can't you do it? I'm like, well, I could do it. It's just that I hate the draft. And he goes, well, you at least have dinner with me. So I go to dinner with him. And we sit down, we introduce each other, we start talking like small talk. Literally 5 minutes into the meeting, Chili, I said, forget everything I said about not representing him, totally signing you. He's like, why? I'm like, dude, you're going to be a superstar. And he's like, how do you even know that? You've seen me play once. And I was like, I don't care. Makeup, like your makeup is ridiculous. I don't care.
That's amazing. It's really amazing that you can just see across the table and know somebody's, you know, really got it, so to speak.
I mean, I've been wrong before. I mean, I only tell the good stories, but the makeup on him, from day one, I mean, I'm not even playing revisionist history here. Day one, I've been telling everybody this guy's a big leaguer. And, you know, I've never, ever sold him short. And I've never, I've just been so bullish on him from day one. You know, even when he hit like 240 in the Penn League, I told every company that ended up signing him that first year, they're like, you know, this guy 5'7" was an 11th rounder and hit 240 in the Penn League. Why would we sign him to an endorsement deal? And they all, you know, were like, I just told all of them the same story I just told, and they believed me, you know, based on my track record. And then the next year, he had his breakthrough season, and then they all thanked me.
Pretty amazing. He's on the doorstep of playing in the major leagues. Yeah, exactly.
And everyone always, you know, the reports I read says he has a high floor, low ceiling, because he's 24. But, you know, if you tell me Carlos is going to be a utility player, I believe it. If you tell me Carlos ends up being a 10-time All-Star, I believe that also, because I think the sky's the limit for a guy like him. I mean, he's just so determined to be great, and you don't see that often. And I'm fortunate that I have a lot of clients like that, and But Carlos is just, I mean, he's one in a million.
Well, and just talking from a scouting perspective, I mean, from our 11th round pick to be what looks like a certain major leaguer in some capacity is a heck of a job by that scouting department, the development staff, and a testament to him as well.
Sal's a former minor leaguer, Willie Romay, and he loved Carlos, and he knew the makeup. And it's funny, on draft day, I was certain the Houston Astros were going to take him. And I thought that was a great fit for him, and you know, with Altuve there, and Boston ended up being a great fit also because of the Pedroia experience. But I always thought that Houston was going to end up taking him based on everything I'd been told and dealing with. And I know they wanted to, but they ended up taking somebody else. I don't remember who it was. And like 2 picks later, Boston took him.
Funny how that works. All right, next guy.
I was saying the draft is always a crapshoot. I don't even try to predict teams.
Yeah, very true. Next topic I want to move on to, since we've had a show and I've talked to you, is on 40-man day, I guess last month, you had Seth Lugo added to the New York Mets 40-man roster. First of all, I'd love for you to tell the story of Seth Lugo, because it's a great story, one, and I'd love to just get your or what that means for Seth kind of as an individual and a baseball player.
Seth, I kind of saw the writing on the wall a while ago because they invited him to go to the Barber's training session in January, and I imagine they weren't expecting to lose him in the Rule 5 draft, if they were inviting him in January. So I kind of figured he was going to go on the 40-man, which I never take for granted. But, you know, if the Mets are inviting you to something in January, it's kind of a safe bet you're going on the roster.
Right, that's a good point, yeah.
He led the organization in strikeouts last year, so they kind of had to keep him. And he's a guy that he was a 34th round pick out of a small D1, and Tommy Jackson, the scout, had him on a pro day, like a one-on-one workout, because a bird dog saw him and said, "You should check this kid out." And he was like 3-7 with a 5.8 ERA because the team behind him wasn't great, and his stuff. Ridiculous, and he ended up going in the 34th round, and immediately had this back stenosis spinal injury. I wasn't his agent then, and he had this career threatening back surgery. And then I had another client on the mat, and I went to go see that guy throw, and Lugo started the game and just dominated. And I figure 6'4". 200 pounds. I'm looking at him like it's a first round pick because he pitches it like 88 to 98. It's weird. And the reason he pitches it 88 to 98 because he can't fit 95, 98 because of the back injury. So he's got to pick his spot. And it's really, it fools hitters like crazy because, first couple innings, he'll be 88, 91, and then he's down 0-2, and then 97 shows up. And he's fun to watch. And anyway, I saw him that day and I asked my client, does he speak English? And he laughed at me. He goes, "No, he's from Louisiana. Of course he speaks English." I'm like, "Oh, that's weird." Because I don't speak Spanish. I don't have Latin players because I don't speak Spanish. And that sucks. But Lugo, I asked him, like, "Well, what round did he go in?" And he's like, "I don't know, 3-something. I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" And then he goes, my client at the time, he's retired now, he said, I'm like, "Is he a good dude?" He's like, "Yeah, he's a great dude." I'm like, "Does he have an agent?" And he goes, "He's wearing the same shoes from college from 2 years ago." And I'm like, "Right then." And then I talked to Lugo, I explained who I was, and I live next to the field. And I said, "Do you want a dinner?" He came to my house. My wife made dinner, and he hired me that day, and I've been his agent ever since.
That's really that's a great story. I love that he's wearing the same shoes from college.
I found him by accident. I just went to the field and saw him, and again, he's another guy that I don't want to oversell. One guy and single him out, but like Lugo's makeup is ridiculous. His makeup is so good, and he's overcome so much, and again, it goes back to like my scouting philosophy. If you find 80 makeup guys, you're always going to have a chance to find big leaguers as an agent. And people make fun of that. I just made fun of that. It's like, "Oh, they're good people, but they can't play." And I believe out of the smaller agencies, because I don't do the volume of the big guys. I've probably had more guys drafted after the 30th round playing the big leagues than anybody.
Yeah, I mean, that's almost getting to be your reputation in some ways.
I mean, I've had 9 or 10 guys drafted after the 30th round playing the big leagues. I mean, if you get one in a career, I think that's good. And I'm 33 years old, and I've had multiple, and not just like cup of coffee guys that, have played for a while now. And Lugo's got a chance, if he, and I'm not saying this is a negative. If he was with any other organization, he would have already have been in the big leagues. And it's not like the Mets are hurting for starting pitching. Lugo has experience being a long guy, so I think he'll get up as a long guy this year. But we'll see. I mean, he'll pitch. I believe he'll pitch in the big league this year. So we'll see what happens.
But just going back to your original point, I could see how he could get overlooked by scouts if they sit there and they're a little lazy and they sit there the first inning with their radar gun and see him hitting 88, 89, the righty, and they kind of ignore him. You go up, you get your sandwich, you don't keep the radar gun going, and then all of a sudden he starts popping 97, and it's a completely different pitcher.
Well, it's funny. One of the guys I consider to be my mentor, the guy who gave me my first job in baseball, actually scouted Lugo this year and hated him and just said, you know, this guy's your run-of-the-mill minor league guy. And then, like, the next week, Aswahe faced him, and Aswahe told me, like, you know, he's got pretty average stuff. And then the second time he faced him, Aswahe called me, like, this is, like, the most annoying pitcher I've ever faced in my entire life. Because he'll pitch 88, 89, 90, and then 98.
It's almost like having two different fastballs.
It's crazy. I've got a guy with the Red Sox who's again, another really high makeup guy, Taylor Grover, and he's 97, 99, and that's all he throws, you know, and he's got secondary pitches that are good, but he's a really good prospect. I think he was a ninth rounder from Boston, and they like him a lot. He'll be in Double A this year, and it's his 40-man year, so he's going places, but he's a 97, 99 guy. You're not 99 guy. You're not going to see a lot of 90-mile-an-hour fastballs from him. And with Lugo, first pitch of the game, but always going to be 90, 91, and then, you know, mixed in changeups, two-seam, sliders, you know, and he's a 3-4 pitch guy, and he's a legit starter. He's a little older. He's 26, but he missed the full season because of the back injury, and then he just, like, skyrocketed through the system.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with him next year, so...
I think he'll play in the big leagues. I mean, if somebody, God forbid, gets hurt, he'll get a chance. If they need a long guy, I mean, obviously he'll be in big league camp, so he'll get to show his stuff there. It's always hard competing on a team that was just in the World Series. His stuff's better than a guy that I represented who's now retired, David Herndon. Herndon went to the Phillies after they won the World Series and was a Rule 5 pick, and he ended up sticking with the Phillies for 3 years and then had Tommy John and kind of screwed up his career. And then he retired after bouncing around from the Yankees to the Brewers. But with Herndon, similar situation, going into a situation where, you know, a team doesn't really need you and they're taking a shot on you because were just in the World Series, and Lugo's kind of walking into the same thing at a similar age, and I think he's got a really good chance to have a long career.
Now, I don't know that you touched on it too much. We've covered a lot, but what does him getting added to the 40-man mean for his, I don't know, career earning potential? What does it mean for you?
He makes more money, gets a big league contract now they can call him up to the big league. You know, now he's an option for the major league. So if somebody gets hurt or, you know, let's say he makes the team out of spring training, they just don't need to add him to the roster. He's already there. But if he doesn't make the team out of spring training, they can just call him up whenever they want. And he's got his three options and, you know, that's 3 years. And, you know, if there's an injury exemption, if he, God forbid, he gets hurt again, you know, there could be four. But, you know, that starts the options and all that good stuff.
So it's a bit. I mean, it's a reason to cheer. I mean, it's a good thing. Obviously, it's a very good thing.
It's like the second biggest accomplishment you can do before it's the biggest accomplishment you can do before getting to the big league.
That gives a little more perspective. So, yeah. Let me turn now to the winter meetings. Where, like I said at the beginning of the show, I don't know, 5 days, 4 days, whatever it is, depending on when people are listening to this. What are you doing in advance of the winter meetings?
Setting up meetings and figuring out what my schedule is going to be when I get there. And then, you know, I have this great plan for what I'm going to do when I get there. And then the schedule goes in the garbage and then I just run around like I'm crazy.
Can you give us a little insight into what it's like being an agent for those 4 days? And well, I guess it's going to be Nashville this year. God bless you for going to Nashville.
Nashville, the city is amazing. Nashville as a winter meetings venue stuff. And it's because the Opryland Hotel is like a mile long. The trade show's on one side. There's five lobbies. There's a million rooms. It's hard to meet with people. It's hard to run into people. You got to really schedule everything. And, you know, I'm going to be hitting the trade show hard. You know, my whole plan going into it like a week ago was just to go to the trade show and just do my normal thing with the teams and the reporters. And now with the trades that are happening, now I have meetings with teams, more than I would usually. So I'm going to end up talking to people from all 30 teams like I always do, but now I, like, actually have scheduled meetings because of, you know, the trade, because now I got to, because both, one of the guys who got traded, you know, potentially, that if the trade comes to fruition today by 9 p.m., you know, this catcher, Mr. Clevinger, I'm not even going to hide who it is, so I don't care. If Clevinger actually gets traded, he's going into the arbitration year, so I need to get, I'd like to get some kind of idea what his playing time situation is going to be, because he's out of options and he's ARB eligible. Obviously, the Mariners know that, so they must have some kind of plan for it. I would like to relay that to my player. And with Aswaye, I just want to, you know, see my friends like Logan White and those guys and Sam and AJ and those guys and just say, you know, hey, you know, good job scouting Carlos, high five.
So it's 100% just getting an idea of where they see him for the next 12 months, essentially.
I try to do that for all my guys. I try to give them an idea of what to expect going into spring training for all my guys. I don't always get that, but I really try hard to talk to every team so I can get an idea of what to expect going into spring training for every one of my guys, which they all appreciate. And a lot of agents don't do that, so I just gave away a trade secret, so that's awesome.
Yeah, pretty sweet. But it does make sense. I mean, I'll use Mr. Clevinger as an example. If all of a sudden they said, well, we want to have you hit more against lefties this year, if we want you to play third base more often this year or something like that, it would be nice to know in December rather than when you show up, you know, at first day of spring training.
Exactly. With the Orioles, he was strictly just an emergency guy, and they, you know, I'll say it, I don't care. They misused him, in my opinion. They really misused him. And he didn't have a lot of backers in the organization, and there were some in the higher ups like that really did like him, but the overriding people did not, in my opinion. I think it's obvious. And Baltimore, you know, should have been a great fit for him because he's from there. And then Caleb Joseph just became the guy that they liked more than Steve, and now they have nothing to show for Jake Arrieta. So good for them, and. And now, Steve's going to Seattle, a place where I know Seattle's been after him for a very long time. And I think I think if that actually happens, if that comes to fruition, Steve's going to put himself in a really good position. He finally might have caught a break, no pun intended, going into his first year arbitration.
Yeah, actually, it could be, you know, it's sad to see him go. I'm an Orioles fan, but it would be nice to see him get an opportunity to play a lot more.
Can you at least agree with me that the Orioles misused him so I don't sound like a total jackass?
Oh, no. I would agree 100%. Actually, I would have said it for you so that you didn't have to say it. No, they absolutely never used him properly. This is a guy that, particularly with Weeders out last year, really should have gotten more of an opportunity. And I'm a Caleb Joseph fan. I don't want to take anything away from him, but
right. There
certainly could have been a nice platoon or a time split or whatever the word is I'm looking for there. No, absolutely. Clevinger never
and
had
I
a good chance.
I also think people don't realize that Steve, he was the opening day third baseman a few years ago for the Cubs. Like, he played third, he was drafted as a shortstop, and he's a convert to catching, and he's a good catcher, but he's got a lot of value, like, as a multi-positional guy, and the Orioles never wanted him to do that. He never took ground balls, like, during spring, ever. And they kept saying, get better defense. And his defense was always pretty good. And at one point, they sent him to the minors when he led the league in balls called for strikes because of his pitch framing. Like, he literally was leading the league in pitch framing when they sent him down, and they told him to work on his pitch framing. And it was like, what are you talking about?
Well, I guess we can peel this a little bit. You know, our relationship, I texted you once and just said, what's the deal? Because I was watching the game, and I saw his defense, and I was like, this guy can really catch. And then you hear all the other stuff, and you're like, "What's you know?" All you hear is negatives about his defense. I was like, "What's going on here?"
I think with Showalter, who is a very respected manager, likes catchers who hit 200 but can throw 100 miles an hour.
Well,
and Steve's arm strength is not of 100 miles an hour. Steve's right. An offensive catcher who can play good defense, and Caleb is a good defensive catcher who has power. So they're different players, and they're similar in age, and I think the situation would have been, with Steve being out of options, clearly he would have been claimed off waivers, probably by Philadelphia, because they have first waiver claims. You know, they probably, you know, somebody would have claimed Steve off waivers if the Orioles took him off the roster. I'm sure they know that. And you know, the alternative, like, which would have been really bad for the Orioles and good for them for making a move if this happens. The alternative is Weeders comes back, Clevenger's out of options, and they have the option Caleb Joseph to AAA, which would have been a travesty.
Right, exactly. Or they could have used Clevenger in the role they probably should have a couple years ago of playing some games at catcher, some at first, some at third, move him around a little bit, let him bat off the bench. Yeah.
Yeah, or that, which I don't even consider anymore for Baltimore because I've given up on that because I've been beating that drum for years and I've been ignored.
Once again, it goes back to the same thing I said about Asuahe. Maybe he's more of a National League player, but I hope maybe he gets, if this trade goes through, and knock on wood or whatever, you know, cliche we want to use, maybe he really does get an opportunity here to go hit. And his power could really fit well in a big, you know, spacious outfield like that where he could drive in a bunch of doubles.
Oh, man, I told Steve, because, you know, it's funny. Steve told me yesterday that he's never played in Safeco. It's the only field he's never been to.
Really?
And
wow.
I'm like, And I was like, oh, my God, dude, like, you are the perfect Safeco player ever.
He could really pepper those gaps all day long.
Oh, Steve, I really believe. I mean, Steve hit 294 last year, and if it wasn't for the last, like, game of the season, he would have hit 300. And you know, if he goes to Safeco, I think he'll hit 300 if he gets regular playing time. You know, that's the thing with Steve. If some guys are made to sit on the bench for a week and then play, and Steve's not one of those guys. He's a rhythm guy, and if he gets regular playing time, he hits well. And the Orioles figured that out at the end of last year. They started playing him, and he hit 300.
Yeah, you just shield him against, you know, the tough, you know, lefties and so forth, and you got a pretty nice player there, sure.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a good platoon with him and Iannetta, if that's what it ends up being. So that's good.
Yeah, actually, that really could work out and not be a particularly expensive pairing either on top of it. So
$3 million for both of them.
Jeez, crazy!
Good value for catching for them. That was I you know, if it happens, I think it's a good move for both clubs. I don't think Seattle wants to pay $9 million to the player that I don't represent that's in the trade, and the Orioles are probably going to lose their first baseman who I also don't represent, so I'm not naming him. But you know, it fills a need for both clubs, and it's a good baseball trade.
Yeah, I actually think it would be a really good trade for both teams because I think the player that you can't mention would be a really good fit in Baltimore playing first base as well.
I think he'll hit 30 home runs in Baltimore if he's healthy. I love that guy.
Just bat him sixth or seventh and don't let him play in the outfield, and that's a pretty good stick, like you say. I mean,
oh, yeah, he's just, I mean,
as long as he's not hitting in the middle of your lineup or he's playing a corner outfield, that's a pretty good ball player.
He's better Mark Reynolds.
Yes, that's well said. Yes. That's well said.
And yet I name Mark Reynolds, but I won't name Mark Trumbo.
Well, I think Reynolds is retired. I do think Reynolds is retired, although you just dropped the name. So now we ruined that gimmick. Great.
I did that on purpose, so whatever.
I know you did. I do know we have a little bit of limited time today with you, but I've got to, with the...
No, I've got some more time. I'm good.
Oh, okay. Well, before we get out of here, I do need to have you tell the... With the Rule 5 draft about a week away, depending, I think it is actually about a week away, I've got to have you tell your story about Adrian Nieto and with Mr. Bowden. That story has to be told again.
Yeah, that was fun, man. Nieto, I found out the first day I got to the winter meeting that he was probably going to get selected by Chicago, and I called him, and he was all excited, and then it ended up happening, and I raised my hands, and he ended up sticking in the big leagues, and last year was a rough year for him, and the White Sox didn't bring him back, and he just signed in Miami, and hopefully that's a better opportunity for him, but him getting selected in the Rule 5 draft and sticking all year was incredible. First time for a catcher in 8 years that happened. The last guy to do it was with the Nationals.
Jesus Flores.
Flores, thank you. So,
yeah, I'm writing an article about him is the only reason I knew that answer off the top of my head. So
yeah, it was the last guy to do it was Flores, and then and then last year somebody got taken in the Rule 5 as a catcher, but I don't believe he stuck. But yeah, it was an amazing story after everything Adrian been through. So that was great for him, and it's such a good story. His family's so good, and I'm just really happy for him. Last year was just very difficult, the worst year of his career, which sucked, Hopefully he bounces back to Florida. It's a good spot. He's from here, and there's not a lot of depth in Miami, and They really wanted him, and hopefully it works out for him there. And then, Jim Miller just signed in Milwaukee. I got that done, which because I sent everyone to the Brewers for some reason. And that one's funny because that wasn't planned at all. I actually crossed the Brewers off my Jim Miller list early on, and it ended up acting – it was weird. I got a lot of calls on Miller because he had such a good season last year and didn't get called up inexplicably, in my opinion. And he just had this great year. He's still throwing 96 at 33 years old. And there was just a lot of interest in him early on in free agency. And Matt Arnold, the assistant general manager of the Brewers, was from Tampa. And he personally wanted to bring Miller to Milwaukee. So originally Milwaukee wasn't in on Miller. I wasn't in on Milwaukee. And then somebody from the Brewers called me and figured out that I was Miller's agent and put together Arnold, me, and Miller, and then it happened. And then he picked the Brewers over the other teams.
That's really amazing. How many people have you put with the Brewers now? It seems like that is your pipeline.
Oh, it's always been, I had, Darren Ford, Lorenzo Cain, Jeremy Jeffress, Brantley, all came from there. And then Taylor Green, and then I had Omar Aguilar and Alex Ferriard, who were 40-man guys. And then now I've got Dustin Demuth, Carlos Leal, Brandon Diaz, Jay Chapman, Jim Miller, Jeremy Jeffress, and Aaron Sharkey.
See, I hope you're comped tickets when you go to the Milwaukee Brewer games anyways.
Oh, I haven't paid for a baseball ticket. I actually haven't. I told my wife that I don't think I've paid for a baseball ticket in 12 years.
Yeah, why would you? Exactly.
Interesting story. Players, when they leave tickets in the major league, they have to pay for those tickets.
Do they really? I didn't know that.
They do, because otherwise it would be additional compensation on top of their contract.
It's amazing what we get into in this podcast, because I always assumed that it was like in the other sports where your comp's like two tickets a game or some nonsense.
No, baseball players always have to pay for their tickets that they leave. So, like, when you get like 90 family members asking for tickets, that's really expensive because it's the family section and they have to pay face value. So, when you figure $80 a seat, that's a lot.
Oh, so they don't even hook them up with a discount. Oh, man, brutal.
Oh, no, it's face. And it's expensive, so it's not free. So free information there. The comp tickets, if you know somebody in the big leagues, they're not free.
What about even in the minor leagues? Are the minor leaguers having to pay for those tickets?
Minor leaguers, they're run by not the parent club. They're owned by different entities, business entities. So those are always free.
Oh, I was going to say, because I often see a somebody with five or six of their friends sitting in the seats behind home plate, and I have often wondered if they're paying for those seats. I couldn't imagine.
No, the minor. I mean, first off, they don't make anything.
Right.
And secondly,
that's the other problem.
Those are all free. I mean, they would never charge for those. And I don't. I think the teams like having more people there. Fill up the stadium. So those never cost money. But in the big leagues, you gotta pay for your tickets.
Yeah, actually, I would prefer if they would not have those people behind home plate. But that's just a scouting. Narcissist in me or whatever. So
that's funny.
Yeah.
Also, we probably should also cover the Brewers.
Okay, let's cover the Brewers. Okay, Frankie Rodriguez got dealt not too long ago, and your client Jeremy Jeffress is now walking in, it looks like, into the closer role, right?
And then Will Smith will be fighting it out in spring. Will is such a good situational lefty, and I don't know if they're going to be willing to keep him in that, move him from that role. And Jeremy's arm bounces back a little bit more quickly than Will does, and he's a little bit more athletic, and it's right there for him. I mean, if Jeremy has a good spring, he's the closer, and we'll see. I mean, he's obviously a trade target because I know Milwaukee's rebuilding, but at the same time, if he stays in Milwaukee, which is a place that he dearly loves, as evidence of going back there as a free agent a couple of years ago and then rebuilding his career and having such a good season last year. But he's got it all right in front of him to be the closer. So, and he's going into arbitration. So, I had Jeffress, who was going to be a reliever, going into ARB1, and Clevinger, who was going to be a third-string catcher, going into ARB1. And a week later, Jeffress might be closing going into ARB1, and Clevinger might be a starting catcher going into ARB1.
Yeah, it's been, all things are winning for Josh, right? All things are looking up.
Between those two things, Lugo going to the 49 and Asuaje getting traded, it's been a very crazy couple weeks for me.
Yeah, it's been good.
Yeah, it's been great. It's been, everything's been good, so I'm waiting for something terrible to happen, like my plane crashing or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, because normally, you know, it, for every good piece of news an agent gets, you probably get five pieces of bad news, so...
Which, by the way, we're going to have to cut this part out, and you're going to have to cut out the segment.
All right. One last question before I get out of here, and I think I worded it terribly with you earlier. With Nieto, I was trying to get you to tell the story of you negotiating a contract with Jim Bowden.
Oh, okay, yeah. That is one of the weirdest experiences of my entire career. When I was doing his deal, it was the old system, and we were trying to get a lot of money. He fell to the fifth round because of performance issues and injury concerns, and he held out until like 4 days before the signing deadline at the time. And the funny thing is that their first, second, third, fourth, and fifth rounders that year, like Ian Desmond, Aaron Crow, Destin Hood, one other guy, a pitcher, and Nieto, their first five round picks were all unsigned going into the last 5 days. And I didn't want to be the last guy holding the bag since my guy was the last guy drafted. So I was fine with him signing first. And Jim called me on a conference call. I was in California. So it was 3 hour time difference. It's like 6:20 in the morning. And, the whole front office is like on a conference call. He's like, "Hey, Jim Bowden, the Nationals. We just wanted to see where we were with respect to Nieto's contract negotiations. You know, you're on a conference call with Dana Brown and Boone and just literally the whole front office." And Jim just lights into me. He just starts screaming at me. I'm like, "What the hell is going on?" And he's like, "I bet you want $500,000. And I was like, "That would be great. You're not getting it." And I'm like, "Okay, you said it, not me." And and he asked me again what my plan was. And I'm like, "Well, you know, we're looking for fair compensation. If we don't get it, it's going to USF." He goes, "You know what? He'll just go to USF, and in 3 years we'll draft him when he's represented by Scott Boras." And I was like, "All right, Jim, good luck with your legal problems." And then, like, that didn't go very well.
Which, at the time, if people don't remember it, the Smiley Gonzalez fiasco and I don't know if it's alleged or not, skimming in the Dominican Republic.
It's alleged. It's alleged. He didn't get convicted. It is alleged. And so, like, last year at the winter meetings, I was standing next to Jim. He doesn't know what I look like, which is weird, because I literally met him like 30 times, and he still has no idea who I am. And I was standing right next to his radio booth, and I was with one of our mutual friends. And I'm like, "Hey, can you tell Ralph I say hi?" And my friend had to walk away because he's laughing so hard. Every time I'm within like earshot of Jim Bowden now, and I'll do it again this year, I call him Ralph. It'll happen probably six times this year at the winter meeting.
For those that aren't picking up, why is he Ralph?
The Twitter fiasco where he was allegedly plagiarizing sources and then claimed he got hacked, and then they changed his Twitter name. The Twitter handle was changed to the name Ralph. So every time I'm around him, I'm like, "Is that Ralph?"
Wait, is that Bowden or is that Ralph? Which one are you now?
Yeah, and everyone always laughs, even though it's not even that funny. It's just because I do it within proximity to him that it's good. Because I don't care. Like, he's never getting a baseball job again, in my opinion. And I'm not. You know, even if he does, I can't imagine he'd like to do a lot of business with me. So,
yeah, it's tough to burn a bridge. It's already completely burned to the ground. So.
Yeah, but what's funny is I've burned bridges to ground, I've burned bridges to the ground, and teams still have to deal with me, because at the end of the day, and I'll use this comp lovingly, how many bridges do you think Scott Boras has burned? At the end of the day, the agent doesn't matter, it's always the player, and even if the agent burns the bridge, if you want to sign the player, you got to deal with the agent.
Yeah, that's a great point. Like you say, believe me, every team doesn't like Scott Boras because he takes money out of their pocket, but at the end of the day, they all deal with him.
I mean, do you think Boston was thrilled paying Price what they had to pay him? I mean, Price got an amazing contract, and they did a, you know, whoever the agent was, and please don't mention who they are, you know, seemingly did a great job, because that is a historic contract, and it raises the bar for all players, and that's what the union wants, and that's what the players fight for, and that's great for everybody. So, like, I'm not jealous of something like that. That just raises the bar for everyone else, including my guys. So stuff like that's great for me, but I can't imagine the team being real thrilled about it.
Yeah, sure, of course not. And in some ways, you're the enemy. I mean, you're negotiating against them. I mean, you're not supposed to be somebody they like.
Well, that's the thing that you're always told and taught. You know, I always say the word friend and friendly, and I mean that on a personal level. But when it comes to, like, doing work, I don't have any friends with Dean. There are no friends. This is all business. This is work. And, you know, there are people I have good relationships with and like any agent, but... you know, there are no favors. There are no, you know, taking on guys just because they like you. I mean, sure, there's the you know, take my word for it, sign this guy, you know, occasionally, because if you've done enough business with a club, you know, they trust you over a period of time. Like, and the best example I probably can give is my relationship with the Brewers. I begged them to sign Jay Chapman out of Indy Ball. And, you know, despite his injury history, and Jay ended up having a 1.81 ERA last year, and he's on the verge of being back in the big league. So without that relationship with Milwaukee, Jay's career would be over. So stuff like that happens here and there, but, like, when you're talking about tens of millions of dollars, there's no friends, there's no favors. It's every man for himself.
Yeah, and that's why you have a job, is because the player doesn't want to sit there and be in the middle of all that nonsense and that nastiness.
It's one of my favorite things that I coined, so I'm taking this one. If teams were fair and honest with players and paid them what they were worth, I wouldn't have a job.
Yeah, I mean, exactly right. If everything was an arbitration system and it was X and Y, then you'd have no job.
I would have no job. If teams were like, this, you know, you had these, you know, this is what these numbers are worth, and this is what you're worth, this is what you're getting, that then agents wouldn't exist, but except for marketing. So,
well, and I can, I can say it. You know, if the MLB had their way, the whole draft process, you would have no job and no involvement in it.
And I'd be fine with it because I hate the draft.
Well, that always does circle back to that point. So,
and you know what? And I say that every year, and every year I end up with somebody, and that guy ends up being Carlos Tejada.
Yeah, exactly. So, look at you. Yeah, so you complain for 11 months and then get a good prospect out of it. That's a good gimmick.
Remember, I only had to do 3 weeks of draft work for Suárez. I didn't go to the tape. I didn't track him for a year. That was an accident. So it was a good accident, but sitting on a guy for a year is just so hard and time-consuming, and it takes away from the guys that you already represent.
And expensive.
And if you're representing, you know, it takes away from the guys you already represent, and I don't, as a small agency, I don't like doing that. So if I do the draft, I got to make sure it's the right player, the right makeup, and never more than one or two, like, ever. Like, in 2013, I had two draft guys. It was Brandon Diaz and Asuaje, and they're both top prospects, and they weren't at the time, but they are now, and that was... You know, it was literally, Diaz hired me 5 days before the draft, and Asuaje hired me 3 weeks before the draft, and it nearly killed me. So I can't even imagine. The last time I had a guy for a whole year, the first-round pick in 2010, and it was the most stressful, horrible thing in the world. And I made a bunch of money, and the kid got $1 million, and I still hated it.
Jeez. Well, life as an agent. It's all glitz and glamour, right? It's all glitz and glamour.
Yeah, I talked to a college guy yesterday going to the job fair to give him some advice because he was interviewing with one of my friends, and he asked me just for some tips because, you know, and I called him, and Mike did, and I said, what do you want to do, player ops, business, agent? He's like, I want to go to player ops. I'm like, I'll give you some advice, just, you know, promise me you don't become an agent because, you know, this is not an easy life.
Yeah. What's the best advice I can give you? Not do this. Yeah, exactly.
And you know what's funny? I think I've told you this, is when I'm going to colleges to speak, which I haven't done that in probably 6-7 years, but the last time I did it, you know, I would tell the class, you know, don't do this. Do not become an agent. You know, if you want to work, if you look, one of the tricks, and this is a free tip, then I'll go, on when they do the job postings on the internet, they're like, if you love baseball, you know, apply for this job. If you write you love baseball, you are immediately crossed off that list.
Yeah. The truth of the matter is, if you love baseball, do anything besides get involved in baseball. Love baseball.
One of my good friends, this is a great story, my friend Aaron, he was my intern in college. While I was in college, I had an intern, which is hilarious in its own right. But he's one of my best friends, outside of work, and he loved baseball. He's a diehard Twins fan, and we actually met at a baseball card show. I met his parents because his mom was buying Joe Mauer baseball cards back in 2001, and I'm like, why are you buying Joe Mauer cards in 2000, as a minor league? He's like, oh, our son's a huge Twins fan, loves prospects, and back then, before Google, that was, like, really impressive to me. So we both ended up going to Florida State, serendipitously, and I met him at FSU. We became good friends. He interned for me, and he started handing out business cards at Chipola. Like, so he met Clevenger, he met Kane, he met Russell Martin, he met Adam Rowan, he met Ford, Matt Gamble, Michael Saunders, David Herndon. So, I was there, during the golden age of I just had it in the right place, right time. He met all these players and is a diehard baseball fan. And you know what he did after college? He quit immediately and became a talent agent in Hollywood. Now he works for Liam Neeson.
Yeah. So who's the big winner tonight? Yeah, exactly.
But I'm just saying, he was an agent. He worked with an agency, me, for 3 years, and said, I can't do this because if I do this and go down that path, I'm going to hate baseball.
Yeah. The first thing you said when we started this podcast was, I'm going to make you start hating baseball. And there are so many times I say, yeah, that's kind of true. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You see this side of the game, this side. My wife always, it's a common analogy, but it's a good analogy. My wife, when people make the argument, oh, doctors and teachers aren't paid what baseball players are made. And you know what? Tom Cruise makes more than doctors, too. And baseball players are entertainers. They may be athletes, but this is entertainment and show business the same as movies are.
Yeah, nobody has a problem with Taylor Swift making $70 million in a tour over the summer, but they have a big problem with Jeter making $25 million a year.
Right. So, and I get it, because sports are passionate, I'm a fan, I get it. But it's all proportional to what the industry makes. Baseball makes X amount of billions of dollars, and that trickles down to the players. And, as long as players get, in my opinion, if players make more money than the owners do, I'm happy.
Right. I mean, the other option is the money stays with the owners. So,
that is the other option. So, and
wouldn't you rather
go on any message board, go on any, any fan site, go on Twitter, check the disparity between people complaining about player salaries versus an owner pocketing money.
Oh,
fans one certain team in Florida.
I mean, wouldn't you much rather that money go to a Latin kid in some foreign country where it could totally change his family's lives rather than another $500,000 staying with an owner?
That's the thing.
I know
is really,
I'm getting on my soapbox now. But.
I mean, Adrian Nieto, which by all means, leave this in. Adrian Nieto came over on a raft from Cuba. His parents are janitors at American Heritage. They're the best people in the world. And even when Adrian got to the big leagues, they kept their jobs. And Adrian bought them a house, and they came literally on a raft from Cuba. And, I don't think the Lerners are hurting for changing Adrian Nieto's life. Or, I'm sorry, the Grindstorff family and
right.
the Lerners for,
sure.
Both. Adrian Nieto's made over $1 million playing baseball. And can you imagine where they'd be without that?
Yeah, God bless them for that. You know what?
Do you know where I first met Lorenzo Cain? In a trailer park in Madison, Florida.
Mm. Amazing.
Granted, I'm not getting any of it, which, believe me, kills me every second of every day. But his mom. I couldn't be happier. I mean, I'm so happy for her because she's an amazing woman, a strong woman, and she is the best mom, one of the best moms I've ever been around, and she made sure Lorenzo turned into a good person, and now he's a superstar, and now he can take care of his mother, and without baseball, what would he have done? And then, I'd rather Lorenzo have the money than another billionaire, so that's you know, that's why I've always said, you know, you've asked me, other people have asked me, why don't, you know, you're a good scout, why don't you work for a team? I don't want to work for a team. I've never wanted to work for a team. I've never had any interest in player development, like, on that side. I've always wanted to be a player advocate, and that's because that actually impacts people's lives, you know, including my own, but...
Sure.
But, you know, it actually makes a difference. You know, if I sign the next Mike Trout for the Marlins and I work for them, the Marlins aren't going to thank me for that. You know the famous scouting story. The guy drafted Albert Pujols or suggested Pujols that fired 2 years later.
Yeah, I believe the guy that picked Trout was also fired not long after he reached the major leagues as well. Absolutely.
Well, you know, Eddie Bain, the scouting director, got fired immediately after Trout got picked. And I was in Boston doing amazing things.
Right. So... All right, let's wrap it there, Josh. I know you got to run. I'm probably already taking up too much of your time.
Let's do this. I'll call you. I'm getting into the winter meeting.
And that was episode 9 of the Joshua Kuznick Experience. I want to thank Joshua Kuznick for clearing some time and jumping on this week because, as I said, we're a couple days away from the winter meeting. So thank you to him. You can find him on Twitter at Joshua Kuznick. He's pretty good about responding, so check him out there. We are Josh Kuznick Pod on Twitter. If you want to follow us, that would be great. We're hoping that episode 10 is going to be a social media and fan question show. So if you got questions to ask an MLB agent, if he can answer them, he will. So send your questions, ask Josh, do the hashtag so we can find you on Twitter, and send them there. Send them to email either at Joshua Kuznick at AOL.com or at NationalsGM@gmail.com. That's great. That'll wrap up episode 9. Hopefully we'll have episode 10, the social media episode, coming in the next few days. Thanks for listening. If you don't have the dollars, better have some sense.